recently somebody just said to me, Michael, you're the elder statesman of real estate. And I thought, that's interesting. Maybe it's because I got grey hair, but maybe it's because I've been investing for over 40 years and I've probably educated more successful property investors than anyone else in Australia.
Welcome to Property Invest Story, the podcast that goes behind the scenes of property investing stories. Here's your host, Tyrone Shum.
Michael Yarny is known as one of Australia's leading experts in wealth creation through property and shares what his passions are.
But interestingly, one of my passions is the psychology of success and wealth creation. I've been voted Australia's leading property investment advisor four times in the last 6 years. I'm an author of 8 books, 5 of them have been bestsellers.
We'll follow his successful property investment journey and uncover information about how he got started. As the CEO of Metropole Property Strategists, Yarny shares what a typical day in his life looks like.
I've been involved in over $2 billion worth of property transactions, and through our property management department, we're managing $1.5 billion worth of our clients' assets. But I'm not a theorist. I'm actually still involved in real estate. I'm currently involved in 4 property developments personally to keep in the long term, and I'm an active property investor myself. I've gotten to the point where now I'm the conductor of an orchestra and I have a lot of people working for us. We've got close to 50 people in the team in our 3 offices, Melbourne, Sydney and Brisbane. I enjoy running the business side of things, but I'm very much involved in the marketing, in doing the research and the overall big picture strategy, and I spend quite a bit of my day writing, doing podcasts and speaking to the media about my thoughts on real estate matters.
Yarny describes himself as a long-term player in the property investor game and also likes to add value to his portfolio, taking the time to improve his properties.
Over the years, how I do things has changed, but today I'm a long-term investor, but I love adding value, so I'm currently involved in 4 medium density developments, duplexes of 4-bedroom townhouses in good upper class middle range suburbs of Melbourne that I'm going to keep as a long-term investment. So I've always got a few small developments on the go that slowly but surely keep adding to my property portfolio.
So who is Michael Yarny? Expressing an interest in wealth creation from a very young age, he owned that seeing his friends' parents acquire wealth via property investing was fascinating. As he got older, he endeavoured to find out more about how they did it.
I came to Australia at the age of 3. I had migrant parents. They were both hard workers. And as I grew up, I saw that a lot of my friends' parents were wealthy. They had businesses, they had cars, they went on holidays. They all seemed to own real estate. So my friend's parents, in fact, happened to be my parents' friends, were much wealthier. My parents didn't have their own home till I was much older. We lived with my grandmother. They both worked hard. They saved up a little bit to go on Christmas holidays, but we never went anywhere fancy. My parents didn't have their own car till much later on in life also. And I sort of figured if these other people are becoming wealthy through real estate, or that's how I saw it in my eyes as a young kid, I decided I wanted to get involved in real estate as well. So I spoke to them, I learned from them, I modeled them, because there wasn't the books, there wasn't the internet. So I decided I wanted to become wealthy. I wanted to become an estate agent. So while other people wanted to be an astronaut or a fireman, I thought it was the estate agents who were wealthy. I didn't understand that just because they drove fancy cars, they weren't wealthy at all. That it was the people who owned the real estate that were wealthy.
He moved to Australia with his family when he was a child and expresses how growing up with a non-wealthy family taught him important values.
I was born in Haifa, Israel. My mother was from Vienna, Austria, my father from Czechoslovakia, and they escaped Hitler and made it to Palestine. My father was in the British Army, and so therefore we were able to migrate to Australia and became Australian citizens very quickly. I came at the age of 3 in 1956, so I didn't know the language. English wasn't my second language even. I knew Hebrew and German, so I went to kinder. And my early memories were of tears as I sort of didn't understand what was going on, but I soon learned that children learn very, very quickly. And I guess I knew no different. I didn't realize we were poor till, I guess, in my teens when I... Because I never went without anything and my parents taught me lots of good values. But we didn't have the trappings of what I saw as wealth. And as a child, I wanted it all.
Prior to getting started in property investing, Yanni worked throughout university in order to support himself.
I actually worked during the school holidays and Christmas holidays in various jobs. For many years, I actually worked in the storeroom at Portman's over the school holidays, the ladies' fashion store as well, and just to get pocket money because, again, we weren't particularly wealthy, so I had to work my way through.
Yanni began venturing into property investing at a young age. He says that due to a lack of information, he was forced to learn from his mistakes and to teach himself how to succeed with his investments.
Interestingly, when I was 21, I bought my first investment property. I actually went halves with my parents. So around the early 1970s, I borrowed $2,000 because I did some jobs as I worked my way through school and through university. And I borrowed $2,000 and I had half of the deposits on a property in Larch Street, South Caulfield, that we went halves with. Cost $18,000. We got $12 a week rent. And I took a 30-year mortgage because we had no idea how we were going to make money out of it.
Wow.
Now, again, in those days, there wasn't any information about where to buy, what to buy. There was no computers or internet, no research data. So I made all the mistakes. I bought right near where we lived. I bought a street away from where my school was. I bought my comfort zone. I bought where the local shopping center was, where my mum went shopping, because that's all I knew and it's what we could buy. Interestingly, it was the time Gough Whitlam came into power in Australia and inflation was rampant and 17% inflation. And all of a sudden, this property that we bought went up in value a lot. So much so that I was able to borrow against it a couple of years later to buy another property. Now, the worst thing that can happen to a beginning investor is to get it right first time because you think you're smart. I just thought I knew what I was doing. In fact, it was nothing at all to do with that. It was dumb luck, and I bought a good property, and then I bought a second one. And then a few years later, I got married, and I made one of my first mistakes. I sold my properties. So I sold that $18,000 property to my parents. I sold it for my half share of $32,000. It had gone up that much, again, very high inflationary times in the early 1970s. So I sold it about 6 years later. Interestingly, I bought it back from my mother in 2002. I bought it back in 2002 for my half. I bought the whole lot from her for $256,000. I have since built two townhouses on it that are worth about $1 million each. So I still have my first investment property with a big gap in the middle. It was $18,000 then. They're worth about $2 million today.
During the property boom in the 1980s, he made some courageous decisions which catapulted him towards investing in commercial and industrial properties. While he believes he got lucky, he says that any mistakes he made taught him the importance of cash flow and cycles.
One of my early properties, I knew the concept of renovation. I thought it would be a good way to do things. And I tried to do my first renovation myself. Nobody told me that you've actually got to open up the airs to get ventilation when you paint a place. So the first thing I painted, the property I painted, I actually got quite sick and made myself unwell. But it added value to the property. And when I eventually got married and had to sell a couple of those investments to buy our first home, again, not understanding the concept of refinancing and moving on, I ended up then with just a house. And over time, using my cash flow and some savings, I got involved in property investment again. Knew nothing about cycles, knew nothing about when the right time to buy was, or even that some areas performed better than others. That lesson came to me a lot later. But I bought a couple of investments, and then in the early 1980s, I got involved in property development. I was in my 30s and had a couple of business partners, and we got together and were very, very brave. I did some things that if it wasn't a property boom at the time, I would have gone broke. But a property boom covers up lots of mistakes. So we were buying properties to pull down and do either villa units, townhouses, or occasional houses in middle ring suburbs and sell. And it actually worked okay because prices went up. But one time, Tyrone, I looked back and thought, hey, if I'd just actually held on to that land and hadn't done anything, I would have made as much. It was just a property boom that covered me up. Then in the late 80s, got involved in some very brave property developments, did a couple of subdivisions. I did the renovation of an inner city building in Melbourne, and again carried away with a very strong property boom in the late 1980s that came to a very abrupt end in the early 90s when we had the recession we had to have. Unfortunately, during that time, a number of my friends and colleagues went broke because interest rates went from 10 and 12%. We were happy paying 10% interest in those days, Tyrone, to 17, 18%, and things ground to a halt. So the bank said to me, sell up. And I said, to who? Because they wanted us to pay down some of our debts. And there was no one buying. We owned a lot of industrial property at the moment. So one of my early mistakes was getting involved in commercial and industrial property where values dropped considerably as interest rates went up. Fortunately, I had cash flow because these properties were leased. So I was always able to repay the banks. And so they chased people who were not repaying them more than me. But the early 90s was my first experience, even though it was 20 years into investing already, of the importance of cash flow and the importance of cycles. And I thought at that time the importance of counter-cyclical investing, even though I've changed my tune on that too. So as a few of my friends went broke, I thought, there but go by the grace of God, go I. So it's made me a much, much more cautious investor personally and for our clients.
Starting with his company, he shares with us the interesting reason behind the name, with its humble beginnings as a restaurant in Melbourne.
I started the company Metropole Properties as my family trust, and it goes way back to 1979. And it was named after a restaurant in Melbourne called the Metropole. So that's how it got the name. Trading, I still have that company. I've been a director of it ever since. But the company that deals with clients, there's a Metropole Properties Melbourne, Metropole Properties Sydney, Brisbane. So there's a number of companies in the Metropole Group. But yes, that goes way back there. And it was when my friend and my solicitor at the time, Michael Warren, said, hey, would you like to be my business partner? Let's do some developments together. And that was at a restaurant called The Metropole.
Well, that's a very interesting story. So a restaurant turned into property development. I like that story.
And I have survived, and that restaurant is actually still there, but has changed names 15 times.
Oh, okay, that's fair enough. Well, at least you've outlived that restaurant, which is good. What kind of restaurant was it? What type of food?
I can't remember. It was in High Street, Armidale. It's still there in Melbourne. It's now a burger place.
Coming up after the break, we'll continue chatting with Michael Yarni about how he gained his knowledge about property investing.
One of the things I learned along the way is rather than try and do it yourself and learn yourself, to learn from other people.
How he learned from his mistakes.
Where I was scammed by somebody who tried to get me involved in a gold mine. What happened was one of my friends invested some money in a gold mine, and this person told him how he could make lots of money.
And that's up next. I'm Tyrone Shum, and you're listening to Property Investory. Hey, podcast listeners, are you enjoying listening to these stories and want more? Then head over to propertyinvestory.com and subscribe to receive your free property case studies that I only send exclusively via email. Just one of the many benefits of being part of this community. These real case studies are from experienced property investors where they share specific numbers of their portfolio, their strategies, and much more. Simply visit propertyinvestory.com to get your free case studies. Now back to the show. Through trial and error, through learning from others, and through implementing partnerships, Yarni attained his knowledge of the property investment scene.
and I made a lot of mistakes. I studied, I learned, but basically from books and speaking to people, and I had a couple of mentors. One of the things I learned along the way is rather than try and do it yourself and learn yourself, to learn from other people. So this partnership that I had with my friend, whose name was Michael also, we actually buddied up with a couple of people. One was an architect, one was already a reasonably serious developer. And so we had a nice group of people who had various skills that helped us. But again, I made so many mistakes that, as I said, Tyron, were covered up by a rising price, the rising prices of a property boom. It was actually easier those days. There was less regulation. We got builders to do the building, and it seemed to work. One of our biggest projects was an industrial subdivision where we bought a farm. Very brave, very stupid people in Bayswater in Melbourne. We bought this big farm, subdivided it into 30 blocks of industrial land, sold it all off the plan in those days in the late 1980s, and then went to the bank and said, here's a farm we're settling on in 6 months. Here's a fixed price contract from the developer, from the engineers to build the roads and put all the services in. Here's 32 contracts of sale. Would you please lend us the money? We never figured what would happen if we hadn't pre-sold those and how we could have got caught and got ourselves into trouble. Excitement of youth and getting involved in things, and fortunately got away with it, learned so many lessons that now make me a much more cautious developer and help our clients. See, we're still involved currently as our project management services with 52 developments for clients. So we're still doing it. And Bryce Yardney, my son today, has taken over that. And he's running the projects division after my previous business partner, Gavin Taylor, who's an architect by degree, just retired a few months ago.
Yardney explains how these issues he had throughout his journey could have been a detriment to his success.
A six-month settlement and all of a sudden, I'd done one little road subdivision. I found a firm of engineers and town planners who designed the roads, designed all the drainage and sewage. We didn't know what was involved. And then they outsourced it to a couple of contractors and got us some quotes. But we actually did that in the wrong order. We hadn't done a feasibility before. And if we had not done it, if we hadn't been lucky and the sums didn't stack up as well as they did, we could have gone broke. So we water land and then thought, what are we going to do with it afterwards, rather than the other way around of, okay, before I commit to this large sum of money, what are my costs? What are my outlays? What are my risks? What's potentially going to go wrong? Will the banks even lend me money? That's what you have to do today.
He reminisces to a time as a young man where he learned the hard way that not everything that glitters is gold, and to be a more cautious investor.
Again, in my reasonably early days, where I was scammed by somebody who tried to get me involved in a gold mine. What happened was one of my friends invested some money in a gold mine, and this person told him how he could make lots of money. And I said to Brian, my friend at the time, don't be stupid. Why would you do that? Why would he need your... It was $5,000 at those days, which today would probably be equivalent to $100,000. And it was a lot of money. So the end result was I sat down with him. This guy came and sat in my living room and he pulled a nugget of gold out of his pocket and explained to me that I could have this as well. And he showed me these plans of, it sounded very impressive, Asian Pacific Development Corporation. It was actually a mine, Asian Pacific Mines, I should say. And the end result was I gave him my money as well. And he scammed a whole lot of people. He used it to buy himself cars and helicopters and jeeps and things like that. None of it went to redevelop this mine in Wedderburn in Ballarat in Victoria. So it was a couple of lessons out of that. First of all, not everything that glistens is gold. Do your homework and due diligence carefully. There's no get-rich-quick schemes. It was a a blow to my ego of a young guy in his 20s thinking I was so smart getting involved in this big company with a fancy name. So it was a humbling experience, which has remained with me since, to teach me that, as I said, not everything that glistens is gold. Be careful who you get associated with.
Yanni shares some further essential advice to listeners, saying that the real estate business is a slow method of acquiring wealth and to trust your gut instincts.
I have recently been throwing out old copies of Australian Property Investor magazine. Australian Property Investor magazine's recently gone broke, and I've had all these copies way back for the last 17, 18 years. And as I've been throwing them out, I've actually been just reading through and seeing who's been around and who isn't and who's still there. And I've been dealing with the public now since about the year 2000, and there's two or three other people who are still around in that time. But during all those years, I was noticing the ads in the magazines of who's come, who's gone, the ideas they've shared, the stories that have gone on, and it's interesting that there have been lots of interesting characters in this industry. And so I guess one of the lessons I've learned is, again, not everything that glistens is gold. Don't believe everything that people tell you. Do your own careful due diligence. And the fact that real estate, business, investing in general, is a slow way to get wealthy. Wealth is the transfer of money from the impatient to the patient.
The realization that he didn't have to undertake everything alone was a pivotal moment in Yanni's property investment journey. He recognized how important it was to have a mentor and continue to grow and learn more over time.
I think the biggest aha moment I had was when I realized that I didn't have to do everything myself. My father taught me to learn from my mistakes. And I think when I first started, I tried to do everything myself for one of two reasons. First of all, because I was cheap and I didn't want to pay other people, and I guess I couldn't afford it. But the other was to try and learn. And it's just very hard and very demoralizing to do that. But when I recognized that other people before me have actually done it and achieved it, and I think I learned the concept of modeling and mentoring from Tony Robbins many, many years ago when I went to one of his seminars, and it taught me the importance of mentors. I clearly remember the concept that he did what's called a fire walk, and people go there and walk over fire and the hot coals. And I thought, I'm not stupid. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to watch everybody else do it and I'll just sit back. But interestingly, I did do it, and I learned that if you not pay attention, concentrate on the hot coals below you, but actually look at the green grass ahead of you, you can get through anything. So I learned from many mentors, people I pay, people who I've read their books, people whose seminars I've been to, that if I stand on their shoulders, I can see a lot further. I've done some of my best thinking and got some of my best ideas from my mentors rather than from myself. That has taken my investing to a whole new level. And Tyrone, I still have mentors. I still have business coaches. I still have people that I pay. I still belong to mastermind groups because I'm still wanting to keep growing.
With so many years of experience himself, Yanni says that the mentorship he seeks is similar to that of an athlete. He asks his mentors to keep him accountable for his actions and to help him out where he needs it.
Well, that's an interesting question that people ask me. How come if you are very wealthy and you own more properties than your mentors, would you use them? But the example I use is the top tennis players, the top golfers. They all have coaches who actually don't necessarily play better than them, but look at their blind spots. So I ask my mentors to look at my blind spots, to keep me accountable, to have transformational conversations with me. So while I am better in some areas, I'm actually not as good in other areas. So while I have strict discipline in a lot of my business things in my writing. For example, I don't have discipline in my health. I'm overweight and I eat the wrong things. And even just before our chat today, there was somebody giving some chocolate bars in the kitchen here for one of those charities, you know, how you, they collect at the fundraiser. Mm. Well, everyone else bought one chocolate bar. I bought three. I need mentors in other areas of my life rather than financial discipline, like maybe looking after my health or things like that instead. So there's always people I can still learn from. And I think that when if I ever forget that, I'm going to stop growing. It's a lesson that you will find from most successful people. They want to keep growing. They want to keep learning. So I set aside time to do this. And some of nowadays with the internet, it's so much easier to have mentors and mastermind groups and speak with people around the world.
Yani has found mentors in various different ways, acknowledging that as time goes by, his mentors change in accordance with his needs. He says he is excited about learning from those who are following his own mentorship program, as he is able to learn from them as well.
I have a business coach, and I've had business coaches for 15 years. I pay over $100,000 a year for business coaching, and interestingly, I see that as an investment, not as an expense. I wouldn't have been able to grow my business to the level it is without having somebody like that there. I have others in the areas that I'm interested in marketing. One of my great mentors in other areas or mastermind groups is Tom Corley, who's in the United States, who's very like-minded, and I've just written a book together with him. So it's through other people. And over time, the mentors and the coaches I've had have changed. After a few years, I've outgrown them or things have changed. So the people I'm hanging around with today and the people that are helping me today are different to the people who helped me 5 years ago. And there's one other group of mentors that probably don't realize they are.
Okay.
And that happens to be the people in my mentorship program. For over a decade now, I've run a 12-month mentorship program. I actually, and you can find out about it at michaelyardney.com.au, and I've run over 2,000 people through this 12-month mentorship program, and I learn from all of them. I learn things to do, and I learn things not to do, and I probably haven't given them enough credit to actually say thank you, because you've heard it said before, I'm sure, Tyrone, that as a teacher, you learn a lot as well, don't you?
Inspired by Michael Yarny's story and what he's excited about today, we'll keep the conversation going in a future episode on Property Investory, where we'll discuss how to apply the strategy.
I'm now looking at what's going on in the future, and since I've done that, it's changed my investment results and those of my clients considerably. Because, Tyrone, what I'm looking at is what sort of properties are going to be in continual strong demand in the future.
How he has grown his property portfolio.
The results are that over the years, I personally have educated more successful investors than anyone else in Australia, and we've been involved in over $2 billion worth of transactions.
And that's next time in the future episode of Property Investory. Also, I would love to hear from you. If you have any questions, feedback, or want to share your story, send me an email to hello@propertyinvestory.com and let's start a conversation. Thanks for listening.